This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 34 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast, brought to you by Elite Sports Travel. It's been a long season, but we've made it. Tom Brady is in seventh heaven, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are Super Bowl champions. What a ride it's been. Before we get into this week's conversation with Los Angeles Chargers running back Austin Eckler, just a few announcements. Firstly, this is the end. But don't fret, don't worry. It's only the end of the current series of this podcast. We'll be back at the start of April with more big names telling us their life stories from high school to college all the way to the NFL. And hopefully the Neil Reynolds Podcast will return to a post-COVID world. We'll be able to actually get out and meet our guests like we did when we launched this series nearly a year ago. Speaking of COVID, also got a message from our partners at Elite Sports Travel, who are currently offering free cancellations and a full no-quibble refund on all bookings made prior to March 2021. That's important as it offers some security and peace of mind for our listeners who may be looking ahead to the Super Bowl in Los Angeles in 2021. One season into 2022. We'll have more on that when we speak with Ben Welch from Elite Sports Travel in the middle of today's show to look ahead to Super Bowl 56, where I'll be hosting their pre-Super Bowl drinks party. But for now, let's talk football for one last time in our current season run. And joining me is Austin Eckler, a man who does things differently, even when deciding which sport to take up at college to help with his education. We pick up the conversation there.
Well, football definitely wasn't a part of as my life as it is now. Growing up, actually, I played multiple sports. I played basketball, I wrestled, baseball, ran track, kind of just did it all. And then, you know, as it came time in high school, and then you start to kind of just like lock in on some of the sports. And then it came time to go to college. And I was like, okay, how am I going to pay for school? And then it came down to what's my best sport? How can I get a scholarship and, help pay for school? And so then football became the predominant sport in my life.
Okay. And then I guess that from high school to college, what was that journey like? Because obviously, some people are kind of looking at the Power Five schools or all of the scholarship offers coming in, but it's different for everybody and everybody has a different route to the NFL. Yeah. And you played at a Division II school, right?
Right. Correct. So, coming out of high school, I wasn't really highly recruited, which kind of frustrated me because I had a very, very good senior year. I had a solid junior year as well. And so that was kind of just discouraging for the bigger schools to kind of just overlook me and just not even give me any attention, like literally no attention. So I had to face reality, and that was my situation. And I was like, okay, what's in front of me though? The Division II school started to come into me. And, some of them wanted me to play the positions that they wanted me to play, like come in as an athlete and find out where I could fit in on their team, or come in and play defense. And I had played running back my entire life. I was like, no, I want to play running back. Like, that's just where I fit. That's what I know. That's what I've done. And, Western State, they came to me and they're like, hey, our senior running back's about to graduate. We want you to come in and play running back for us. And so that's where that connection happened. I was like, yes, finally. Like someone, I was basically betting on myself. Thinking that, I can play running back. And so Western gave me that shot to prove myself right.
So what was that like? Take me into that experience. I'm trying to think of the crowds you see in the NFL, not this year, of course, but regular NFL crowds, 60, 70,000. What are we talking about in college for you?
So my college was in a very small town in the mountains in Colorado. So it's a little mountain town. If you've ever been to Colorado, there's a lot of like little mountain towns. It's basically one of those. I think it was like 3,000 was the population. And then like the student body was like 2,500. So it was like, 5,000 people, but most people like worked for the campus or lived on campus just for the university. And so, and being in the mountains, it's very like outdoorsy. So it's not like all sports like some of these other, bigger universities. And so we'd probably have like, a couple hundred, like 100 or 200 or 300 people. So it's not many, I almost had more, probably actually did have more of my high school games than most of our college games. There was like a family weekend. You'd get like a special event where it'd be like a pretty good sizable crowd. But, other than that, it wasn't, the best showing, but, and it just made you love football, made you test yourself if you love football or not, because it wasn't necessarily the environment that you want, but you're still getting to play.
Well, yeah, I guess that's a chance to show your character and how much you do love football. That kind of, I will go and play in a parking lot if I have to. Not quite that, but you proved you wanted to keep playing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it was just a situation, like even in the wintertime, like we can have spring ball or anything like that. I couldn't even do my pro day up at Western because there's too much snow on the field. They don't have like an indoor, you know, turf area. So there's definitely challenges up there, but it kept me focused and maybe just, I guess, have some perseverance to overcome some challenges, and it ended up helping me out today.
Even with those challenges and with the smaller crowds, were you kind of, as you were going through your career in college, and maybe it was the back end of it, were you still kind of thinking, I'm gonna get to the NFL? Was it still a part of your plan?
Yeah. So basically the plan coming in was just to, you know, establish myself on the team, you know, try to make as much impact as I could. And I did that pretty early on. I ended up starting as a freshman. I started all my 4 years that I was there. And after my first year, you know, my college head coach, he came up to me and said, "Hey man, you're like all conference rookie of the year, offensive player of the year. Like, what do you want to do next year? Like, what are your goals?" And I put down like all these numbers and goals and like team goals, individual goals. And at the very bottom, I put the NFL shield with just no words, just the NFL shield, because it's just in the back of my mind. But it wasn't what I was focused on. I was focused on, you know, being there in the time that I was at college. And then it didn't really start coming to the front of my thoughts until like my senior year, when I had like scouts at every single practice just watching me. Then it was like, okay, this is a real possibility.
Now, it goes without saying that entering the NFL as an undrafted free agent is somewhat different to being the first overall pick or even a second or third round pick. But that's what Austin did. He went undrafted out of college before joining the Chargers in 2017. And it must take a lot of guts and desire to get over the feeling of intimidation that surely comes in that territory.
Yeah, I was for sure intimidated when I first got into the room. Even when I was just the rookie, just because it's a highly competitive atmosphere, and it's you do or die, basically. You either make it or you cut. And I had never been cut in my life. Still haven't been, knock on wood, but you come in to this, you know, the highest competitive atmosphere in football, and it's still football, but it just seems different because of the stakes. You know, stakes are much higher. This is, you know, life-changing experiences and, you know, money and the social platform. And so coming in, I put a lot of pressure on myself, which is why I was probably intimidated a little bit, just because I wanted it so bad. There was nothing more important in my life than getting this opportunity and taking advantage and making sure that I didn't have any regrets going through the opportunity. I couldn't decide what was going to happen or not, but I could decide that I'm going to put all my max effort into it.
Did you manage to make sure that pressure didn't inhibit you early on, or?
I think that's just how I am as a person. I put so much pressure on myself, and that's kind of what feeds my passion, feeds my competitiveness. It's just like, I just need to make sure that I'm doing my best to be the best me. I don't compare myself to people. I just say, hey, I compare myself to my past history. And that's kind of my goals as I've gone through my football career. Let's build on the last year. And so, yeah, I put all this built up pressure on me just because I needed it. I need that. And that's what drives me.
That's why you got where you are now. Fewer reps as an undrafted free agent, if you're talking about training camp, fewer opportunities to shine?
Oh, yeah. You know, there were six of us in the running back room. Wow. And, you know, yeah, on the NFL team, you play one running back at a time. Typically, sometimes you put two out there, but it's pretty rare. So there's six of us basically competing for one spot. And then we have Melvin Gordon in the room at the time, too, who was a first round pick a few years earlier. And, you know, he was all pro. And so he basically had the starting spot pretty much secured. Now it's just kind of, okay, who can fall in, who can help him out and establish themselves in some special teams roles and just find a different way to contribute to the team. And so basically that's what I ended up doing.
And at that time, maybe now, I mean, there were no preseason games this year. As you get longer into your career, veterans maybe say they don't need them. I wonder what would have happened to you if you hadn't had preseason games as well as an undrafted free agent. Do you think that was important to you, those games?
Right. I think, yeah, it was definitely important. It was something that, you know, allowed me to show that, hey, I can play at this level and contribute in other ways besides, you know, playing running back. I did some great things running back, but I think I did even better things on special teams is what really put me apart from the other running backs, because it just showed that I can contribute on the football field regardless if I'm playing running back or in special teams. And you don't get those live reps like you do in a practice, our preseason game in practice. We don't go live just because of the safety of everybody. We're out there hitting each other for, like, you know, 7 months straight. You want to limit the amount of times you go live. So usually it's just only in games. Well, it is basically only in games, maybe some short down stuff in practice, but yeah. So those reps, they don't come very often. And even like my rookie year, I was six on the depth chart. There were six of us. I was sixth string. And so I would get just, you know, whatever's left over at the end, here you go, you know, make it work. And, you know, that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. So the small crowds again in the NFL, then in the preseason, probably in the fourth quarter, right?
Right. Exactly. So similar situation.
What about, this is a hard one sometimes to pick one out, but whether it's the business side of it or the speed of a defender or the size of somebody in front of you, did you have that kind of welcome to the NFL moment where you're like, oh, okay, I'm not in college anymore?
I think it happened for me early on in my career. I think it was in practice. I remember I was running with the third stringers, and I had a ball, and I like ran out to the edge, and I tried to like run all the way to the sideline to turn the edge like I could in college. And I ended up getting no gain because I literally got ran down, and I came back to the sideline. My coach was like, hey man, you can't do, you're not going to outrun these guys. Like, these guys are just as fast as you or faster. It's not like college anymore. And so that was kind of my welcome to the NFL. Like, okay, like, this is legit. Like, you have to like strategically get what you can get. And that's what's going to make you efficient. That's what I've learned, just to, you know, take what's given and then try to make something from that. But that was like my welcome to the NFL moment. It's like, oh, these guys are actually legit. There's no outrunning these guys.
Coming from relatively humble beginnings, Austin is someone who hasn't forgotten his roots. At the start of the 2020 season, the running back signed a new $24.5 million four-year contract as a reward for his hard work and performances on the field. And while that has represented personal success, Austin continues to pay it forward through his foundation. The Austin Eckler Foundation was formed to help create opportunities for people to fulfill their passions and ultimately their lives. People, Austin says, reflect his own experience growing up. You can find out more about the foundation at austineckler.com.
100%. I always remember where I came from, just because I think that's what drives me, and that's what continues to make me believe that I need to prove myself every single year. You know, when I came into the NFL, it was from a small school, undersized, so to speak. So it's kind of like, oh, this kid has everything to prove. And it's like, okay, well, I put that same pressure on myself every year, and it continues to allow me to build off my season that I had before and get me to the point that I am now. But that kind of led into, you know, just getting to some years in the league, to me looking back and being like, you know what, like, I'm where I am today because of some resources and opportunities that I had that my community provided. The gym being one, you know, that's what my foundation is doing right now. And it didn't hit me, I think, until last year when I started the foundation, the Austin Eckler Foundation, that, hey, like, I'm at a position where I can give back to the communities too, to help, you know, people, just to give resources and help people maybe have that same, you know, beginning, the same just opportunity that they can build on and, you know, continue into the future and help them with their life and career. And so that's kind of where the effort and the focus is coming from the foundation, just my upbringing and how my mindset has changed as I've gotten older and been in this platform with the NFL.
So in your second year, you had a taste of the playoffs. So was that different again from the NFL? Did you notice the intensity?
Yes, actually the NFL playoffs kind of teach me, or taught me how long the season actually was. Because we're deep in this season, right? Like, already the season's 16 games plus the four regular season or preseason games, which I was playing in because it was only my second year and I only played special teams. So I played in all those games. And then we get to the playoffs and, you know, our team is banged up. I have this big neck collar on because my neck and my had some neck injuries. Melvin Gordon had two knee braces on. We had like no linebackers. I'm just like, man, this is a brutal game.
Last man standing.
We're still going. We're still going. So we ended up, yeah, beating Baltimore in the first round. And then the Patriots took us down in the second round. But, okay, yeah, that was another welcome to the NFL. Like, this is real. You have to take care of your body moment for me.
Yeah. When you went through that 2018-2019 season, you're getting more and more touches. Does that grow your confidence? I mean, you hear players talk about rhythm, and running backs often talk about that. Do you think more touches equated to that?
100%. You know, Philip had a certain play style that kind of suited my skills and what I brought to the offense. It's more of a, you know, give me a space, let me run routes, mismatches for linebackers. And so his play style, as far as he's not going to run the ball, he's not going to scramble around, he's going to look down the field, and if no one's open, he's going to throw it to his running back. And, you know, that allowed me to get some more confidence as I continued to, you know, get more touches throughout the season. I think it also allowed him to have more confidence in me and give me the ball more. And so we kind of created a chemistry there and, you know, just started going with it. And it lasted, you know, for another year after that. And I appreciate that man because he definitely helped me jumpstart my career.
Did he ever make you laugh when you overhear some of his trash talking?
It made me laugh every time. It made me laugh every single time. My favorite moment, I scored like an 84-yard touchdown and he got like knocked down and he got up and started screaming 90-yard touchdown right in this guy's ear. And the guy's like, you don't have to say it in my ear. He's like, I will say it in your ear. That was great.
You're acting like you've been there before. The young player should have been the other
way around.
So you mentioned, you touched on it a little bit there, your versatility, you know, to be able to run and catch. Do you kind of pride yourself on that? Or maybe in a way, perfect for the modern day NFL.
Right. I think it just meshes just because I can do anything that you're asking. You want me to run routes? Fine. You want two running backs on the field, one to be in the slot, one to just to create different like communications for the defense, just put a different presentation in front of them. Like I can just fit into so many different situations. And I think that's, you know, something that's just been because of my mindset and what I've gone through. It's like, hey, I'm going to make sure that my game is good as it can be for myself. And I'm obviously continuing to work on it. It's more mental now than it is physical. But yeah, it's just the ability for me to do more allows me to stay on the field and show value to a team. And that's why the Chargers ended up signing me back. She's like, this guy has a lot of value here. So like, we can't just let him go.
We'll be back with more on the Neil Reynolds podcast after this short break. Hello, everybody. Now, as we said at the top of the show, we have a special guest to interrupt proceedings and talk Super Bowl 56. So let me bring in Ben Welch from our partners at Elite Sports Travel. Ben, welcome. We're looking ahead to Super Bowl 56. But Ben, let's just look back at Super Bowl 55, which I think summed up the spectacle that is the Super Bowl. There were 25,000 fans in Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. There was 30,000 cardboard cutouts, but the hair on the back of my neck was still standing on end as they went through all the pregame show, the flyover. I mean, if you can pull off a spectacle like that with half a stadium, then Super Bowl 56 should be fantastic when it all opens up. But it was quite a spectacle, Super Bowl 55, in a different way, wasn't it?
It's pretty cool, isn't it? The NFL really know what they're doing, don't they? The game itself was pretty one sided in the end, but you know, it's everything around it that makes it, you know, so special. Obviously with the, as you said, with the flyover beforehand and the national anthem, and you know, the America the Beautiful, and then you know, obviously the weekend put on an amazing show at halftime. So. It's all of those kind of things that come together and really make it what it is. So, and when you're looking at some of the pregame parties, Miley Cyrus was performing outside yesterday. And then in previous years, they've had, you know, proper real music legends, country music legend like Darius Rucker did it last year, and Kelly Clarkson did it a couple of years ago as well. So, you know, it really is, you know, the A-listers really turn out for the event, and it's, you know, the NFL really kind of go to town and throw the book at it. And it's what makes it such a special event, I think.
Yeah. And as we look ahead to LA next year, and what a great place to host a Super Bowl, brand new stadium as well. I'm thinking back to the drinks event that I hosted for Elite Sports Travel in Miami, and some of the wonderful people I met, your clients, there was a real mix. There were people, there was some sort of parties where they were 100% into the NFL. And then there were some where it was the husband loved the NFL and, you know, the wife was there just to enjoy Miami and everything that was going on around. That's why I think the Super Bowl is brilliant, because it's got something for everyone. Even if you're not the massive NFL fan, but you're with somebody who is, I think it's just, and LA is going to serve up all of that, isn't it, Ben?
It is, and LA is one of those places that, you know, it really does have something for everybody. Obviously, it's got the, you know, the main sort of tourist attractions. It's got the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and it's got, you know, the beaches in Santa Monica, and it's got the theme parks and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, for the real sort of Super Bowl fan and for the huge kind of NFL fan in there, you've got, you know, when the Super Bowl rolls into town, you've got all the big events that come in. You've got all the celebrities, you've got all the parties, the glitz and glamour. You've got the Super Bowl experience, which is, you know, a huge, great event the NFL put on.
So if you are interested in getting out to Super Bowl 56 with Elite Sports Travel, then you can go to elitesportstravel.co.uk/Neil Reynolds. There'll be plenty of information you can sign up for there. And Ben, I think it's important. We mentioned it right at the top of today's podcast. You're going to have a kind of unique free cancellation policy, which I think in this current environment offers peace of mind. I don't think many people would book without something like that now. I think it's fantastic.
It's really important. I think nobody wants to book a holiday at the moment. Everything is far too open and up in the air. Obviously, not just from a COVID point of view, but from, you know, vaccinations and all the rest of it. Nobody really knows what's happening. So in order for us to give as much confidence as we can to people that want to go to the Super Bowl next year, we've kind of decided, well, look, you know, the safest way to do this is to do it on a free cancellation basis. So people basically book their place now, guarantee their hotel room, their tickets and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, if everything goes well and good, then happy days, everyone. You know, you go to the Super Bowl, it's a great event, and so on. But if anything changes over the course of the next, you know, 9-10 months or so, we give you the option to cancel completely free of charge. It's 60 days before the event, so you know that if you're going to get your money back in full, you'll get it back within 14 days. So you can be completely confident that, you know, if the event doesn't go ahead, you're not going to lose any money. You know, everything is going to be safe. And we think it's really important that, you know, people really need to understand that we're doing our best to kind of look after you and make sure that you're in the best possible position.
Absolutely. And if you are listening and you do sign up to go to Super Bowl 56 with Elite Sports Travel, I will see you there at the Welcome Drinks event in Los Angeles. We'll have a good night. Can't wait for that. Thanks for your time, Ben.
No problem. Brilliant. Thanks, Neil.
And thanks for your time and thanks for your support of the Neil Reynolds podcast. Now let's get back to Austin Eckler. But before we do, maybe we should hear from a Super Bowl winning coach.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast.
Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds podcast and my conversation with Austin Eckler of the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, before the break, we spoke with Austin about his impact in LA and how he joined the Chargers as an undrafted free agent. His performances and progress since then have led to the aforementioned contract he signed in 2020, something I foolishly referred to as another little milestone in his career.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say it's a little milestone. For me, it's a pretty significant milestone.
For anyone, it would be. Trust me, I've downplayed that way too much.
But yeah, it's a very significant milestone. It was actually surreal that, you know, I came to that just because I'd been playing for 3 years as undrafted guy from small school and just been working. And then it came to times like, hey, like my contract's up. And I haven't been playing bad. Like, I've been playing pretty well. So what are you guys going to do? And then, you know, Tom Telesco, you know, showed his interest. Said, hey, we want you back. We're going to try to get this done. And ended up getting a deal done for the next 4 years. And so, yeah, it's incredible. And so I kind of feel like I'm a freshman again. Well, I just finished like my freshman year because, you know, I signed a 4 year. So now I'm going into my sophomore year again. I feel like I started over after the new contract. And it's just different because in the NFL, you just continue to go as long as you can, you know, continue to play. So I feel like I'm still young, but I'm the oldest in my room now already. And it's like, what the heck happened to time? It just kind of flew by.
That's a good way to look at it, though. You keep a fresh approach then. How did you deal with the injury this year or being away from games? I know athletes talk about that. It can be a bit of a lonely time, frustrated time.
It is frustrating, especially when, you know, we were losing every game. It seemed like by 7 points or less. Right. And it's just like, oh, it's like we're just losing some consistency, you know, when we have our starters out, you know, with some younger guys and just people that are just straight off the streets with Kalen Ballage coming in and just trying to learn and trying to, you know, help contribute, which did a good job. But if you don't have the guys that have been there, you know, from day one, the guys you're paying, the guys that you want to build an organization, if they're not in the game, it really hurts you. You can see that across any organization because these are the guys that, you know, you're counting on to be there and make plays. And so when I'm just sitting on the sideline, just with my hamstring, I'm just like, first I was like super optimistic, like, oh, I'll be back in like a month. And then a month came around. I'm like, oh no, guys, I cannot run. Like, I still can't run. And so it's just like the athlete mentality. You want to be back as soon as you can. But, you know, all my teammates were like, hey, with a hamstring, you cannot come back early. So I listened to them and made sure I was completely healthy. And, you know, I ended up losing a lot of just my conditioning because I was out for 2 months. But ended up being able to finish out the season. We were like 7-9. And so it wasn't the best situation, but I feel like I made the best out of the injury, coming back and be able to finish the rest of the season.
Well, you guys did finish strong when you look at all those wins you put together at the end. And I was going to ask you about the close games. You kind of alluded to them then. I mean, no one wants to lose by 20 every week, but some of the games you lost by one, by two, mm-hmm. you know, the Raiders game where you think you've won it and then you haven't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wonder how you pick yourself up from those. It fascinates me to see how you go again, because, you know, we would talk in our television studio. It's like, oh, that's got to devastate the Chargers. And then you do finish strong. So I'm fascinated to know how the mindset to bounce back.
Right. Well, I mean, mentally, it does devastate you. Like, we're human too. We go through these emotions. We have emotions, believe it or not. And so, yeah, if we're losing all these games, we're frustrated. We're trying to figure out in the organization, like, what's going on. We're trying new things. We're switching things up, trying new players here and there. And, you know, it's just a scramble, you know, every year, you know, teams, there's so much pressure put on the team and the coaches and the players to win. But it's like, that's not the case for everybody. Not everyone can win, obviously. So it's a rare combination, but once you find that chemistry that makes you have some success, you try to hold on to that as long as you can. And the hardest part is for it to transfer over year to year. And, you know, this was a year where I feel like, or for the past, I guess, 2 years, it's been like, we just losing these close games and like, we're trying all these different things and it just wasn't working out. And then that's when you start to see coaching changes. And, you know, now we're going through that right now. And so, you know, that's how the NFL is. It's either you win or you get out, and that's for players and coaches combined. So, you know, hopefully you're starting up with a new coaching staff, and hopefully we can try to build that chemistry.
Yeah. You must be excited about that. It's hard to go through a coaching change as well. You have to bid farewell to the old coaches, but you got Brandon Staley and of course, Joe Lombardi has done wonders with running backs out of the backfield in New Orleans, right?
Right. Exactly. You must be excited. Yeah, very excited. I definitely was sad to see, you know, the coaches that got me into the league go just because of those connections I built. But, you know, my strength and conditioning coach actually, you know, said it to me, which it really stuck with me. He's like, hey, because we've made a good relationship with me and John Lott. He's like, hey, if I wouldn't have got fired from my other job, I would have never met you. I was like, wow, like that was powerful to me. I was like, you're right. Like that literally because you got fired, you got to meet me. And I'm so thankful that I've met you in my life. And so hopefully, you know, the best for those guys and new connections moving forward. And then also for these guys coming in with Brandon Staley. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing he's called me and talked about how he's a big relationship person. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, starting to build the relationships with him. And then there's the rest of the team for this upcoming year.
You mentioned a truly great quarterback and a great person in Philip Rivers. And Chargers fans I talk to are very excited about where you are as a team right now because of another quarterback. And wonder what you saw in Justin Herbert up close. And if you saw it in practice before we even saw it in games.
Yeah. So Justin Herbert, you know, he's our first round pick, our new quarterback that came in this year. And so you never really know what you're going to get, especially with new quarterbacks, because playing quarterback in the NFL is the most just mentally stressful job in the game. Just the things that Philip used to know and used to do just show just like, you're incredible. Like he would be knowing the defense, the protection. He knows because of the defensive coordinator that they like to run this blitz. Like he would just had that, you know, that chemistry with the entire just league. And so Justin Herbert, he's kind of like a wild factor. Like, okay, we know this kid's smart. We know he has like the physical attributes, but can he put it all together and put it on the field? And then, you know, he got his number called in week two. Like we saw some of it showing in practice. But it's kind of, like I said, it's hard to tell like game reps from practice. Like there's not the same intensity. It's not the same, you know, like, hey, you're actually going to get sacked if these guys get at you. Like there's none of that, you know, you're not hitting the quarterback. And so when you finally got him into the game and they ended up, you know, just, you know, making plays like, okay, maybe this kid has something going on. And then, you know, he put like two games back to back. It was pretty solid, pretty much forced his way into the starting role. And unfortunately for Tyrod, it was a terrible situation, but it was like, how could you take this guy out? Like he's literally playing lights out right now.
And that must excite you for 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm ready to get back out there with him. You know, I always tell him, hey, don't forget about your backfield buddy out there, because he's a little different than Phillip. He can run. Right. And so, you know, there's some situations where it's like Phillip probably would have thrown it to me, where Justin, he just runs. Like, he can keep it alive and he's throwing it down the field. And, you know, he's making it work. So I always got to listen, put him in his ear, though. But, hey, don't forget about your boy.
Well, look how long Phillip played. So it's better for Justin if he dumps the ball off to you, right?
Like, hey, that's what I'm saying. Hey, as long as he's not taking hits, then throw it down the field, man.
As we've already heard from my conversation with Austin, he's so much more than a running back. For instance, through his foundation, he's helping have a positive impact on communities and society. But he's not done there, creating the Gridiron Gaming Group as a way of overcoming the restrictions brought about by the COVID-19 pandemic during this past year.
So Gridiron Gaming Group basically was established. It's a group that I'm, you know, the owner of, but it started when, you know, COVID really shut down all of our interactions with our community. And I was like, what's a way that, you know, players, influencers, just people in general can influence and just talk and hang out and have that same communication that they used to have with their communities? Like, I used to do like meet and greets, I do signings, things like that. And so that's all shut down. And so I went to Twitch. I started streaming on Twitch just for a way for me to like live. It's just like this. It's just a dialogue back and forth. They can type in the chat and I can, you know, read questions and talk. And that's what it started out as. And, you know, we play some games on the side. You know, people always see Twitch as like, oh, we play games. We are a Gridiron Gaming Group, but we're not just gamers. Like, we do that like on the side, but it's more so the fan interaction. And so I just had all these opportunities that were coming to me. And I was like, you know what, other people can do this too. And so that's why I started the group and started inviting people just to share the same opportunity and start to basically build a community around the group that we can all share the community with. We share each other's communities from different sports. We have all but one football player. We have an MLB player as well. So we're still continuing to grow and actually have our first event on Super Bowl, February 7th. Our first event that's going to be just with all the members. It's going to be a good time as far as like giveaways, interactions with everybody. There's like a scavenger hunt. Like, there's just a bunch of just different things for people that are viewing to get involved and have fun and kind of see our personalities outside of football or our sport.
So there you are. That's my conversation with Chargers running back Austin Ekeler. Before we open up the mailbag, I'm recording this podcast the day after Super Bowl 55 and the weekend after we lost the great Chris Westlin of the Around the NFL podcast, who was a dear friend, a close friend, a real man of the people is how I would describe Wes. Somebody who loved being with NFL fans, especially those from the UK. He will be sorely missed. It was just devastating news. I'm glad we gave him a good tribute on Sky Sports. But yeah, it's tough, tough times. Let's bring in Gary.
Hi, Neil. How are you? You good? You tired after last night?
A little bit. Yeah, emotional weekend. Weird that the season's finished. But yeah, I enjoyed seeing another piece of history with Tom Brady. Feel like we're living in special times watching what he is doing.
Incredible. As someone who's new to it all, I wasn't going to, because it's funny, well, it's not funny, but starting this series pre-COVID, then we went through everything with COVID, now we get to the end of the series, and I've just got COVID. So I, as you can hear probably from my throat, but I wasn't going to watch it and I couldn't sleep, so I ended up watching it. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was fantastic. He's a special man with a lot of special drive. I think we saw that on Super Bowl Sunday again. So, and I think you got a question about him, right?
Oh, well, I was going to say, just my one little opinion on that is credit to Mahomes, because the whole game, even though it was such a big point difference, it just felt like it wasn't over until it was over.
That was brilliant. I saw one of the best incomplete passes I'll ever see in my life yesterday, when Mahomes was about an inch off the ground, falling sideways, and threw it about 30 yards downfield, and then his receiver dropped it. Yeah, he is special as well. It was not the classic Super Bowl we expected, but it was fascinating in a different way as well. So with the Bucs coming up on defense, total pressure, the biggest problem was going to be the Chiefs offensive line. That proved to be the case.
So let's open the mailbag. It's going to be the last one of the current series, and a little bit different because we're doing it in a way that you do your column for the NFL online. So
finish that sentence.
Exactly, finish that sentence. So I just want to start off with a question about Tom Brady, or finish this sentence about Tom Brady, which is from Jordan Frost, who says, Tom Brady will call it a day when
he can't do it anymore, and he can still do it. And I was having this conversation with my family today, and they said, why wouldn't he just, my wife said, why wouldn't he just go out while he's on top? I was like, because he doesn't operate that way. He sees each season as a kind of unique challenge. I think he loves the challenge. He wants to get back to the Super Bowl again. He treats each of them as a separate entity. So, you know, it's not the cumulative effect for him where he feels like, oh, I've got seven in the bank. He will be that way when he's finished, but now he's probably hit reset already. Even going into this Super Bowl, the last few days before the game, Brady was talking about couldn't wait for the off season to start. I'm going to play till I'm 45. You know, I think I'll be better in this Bucs offense in my second year. You know, he turns 44 in August. He was one of the stars of the show in Super Bowl 55 and MVP for the fifth time. You know, why not come back? I think he's got a couple more years in him. I've certainly stopped asking those questions in our Super Bowl show. Is this Brady's last game? Because I learned the hard way. He just goes on and on like the Duracell bunny.
Pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. So just moving on to a question from Paul Rort, who says, well, finish this sentence, Neil. This year's off-season will be different because...
teams will be more aggressive than ever before in going and finding a quarterback who is a franchise player. So if you look at back in the few years back, Peyton Manning went to the Denver Broncos late in his career, and he took Denver to two Super Bowls and they won a Super Bowl. A lot of that was led by defense when they won the Super Bowl, but he still delivered a Super Bowl. Brady has turned a team that won 17 games in the previous 3 years into a Super Bowl champion. Now you've got all these teams circling around Deshaun Watson. You hear about Kirk Cousins and the 49ers. I even heard over the weekend that teams had inquired with the Seattle Seahawks about trading for Russell Wilson. These teams realize they don't want to hang around in the middle with a maybe quarterback. I think teams are going to either find their guy where they're all in, or they're going to move on much quicker than ever before. We're going to see Carson Wentz traded. We're going to see Deshaun Watson traded. We're going to see knock-on effects from that. We're going to see Sam Darnold in a new place. Teams are basically going to look at the quarterback. Is he better than what I've got? Yes, then I'll try and trade from him. Their loyalty is going to go out the window, because we've seen, get yourself a franchise quarterback and you can turn it around and win it quick.
Yeah, pretty incredible. Again, what we're saying, what you've seen has happened in Tampa, especially given that we were with Bruce Arians at the start of it now.
Well, we were the ones, he said to us, you know, he said, what do you think, stick with Jameis or sign Tom Brady? And you said to him, Bruce, I think you should... No, you didn't. No, that's not.
I said, pick Brady. He's the only player I know, Bruce. Pick him.
Yeah, I can't even go through with that lie. It would have been brilliant, but it's not true.
Right, last question. I think I need to put a drum roll in here in post-production. From Francis Redwood. And Francis says, to complete this sentence, Neil, the biggest surprise of the season was...
An on-time finish. An on-time finish to the Super Bowl. You know, and I was talking to the league office yesterday afternoon leading up to the Super Bowl. I wanted to include at the start how many COVID tests the NFL had carried out during the course of the season. Just over 1 million COVID-19 tests on players, coaches and staff. We had some postponements of games. We didn't have a single game cancelled. We didn't need an extra week at the end of the season. We didn't need an 18th week. Everything proceeded on time. Yes, we had some games played on Monday nights. So it was a Tuesday, Wednesday. We had a game played every night of the week this year. It was that kind of year. That's rare for the NFL. But they did it. It was a massive, massive success. And credit to them. I felt like everyone needed it. We all knew we could come together on Sundays and watch the NFL. And massive round of applause for the NFL. It seemed like a impossible task, and they got it done.
A great season, a great spectacle.
So we can put our feet up, not for long, just for a month or two, month and a half, and then we'll get back at the start of April, right?
I know, I feel lost, because I was thinking about today, like getting this all prepared with you and going over notes, and I thought, what am I going to do tomorrow?
Well, I was hoping, you see, I was thinking, well, I haven't got any Sky to do, you know, I haven't got a lot to do. Oh, well, at least I can do the podcast. It's like, oh, no, Gary doesn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
It's all on Gary.
I need to put my feet up and rest my COVID body.
Exactly. So, but it has been a good series. We've told some great stories and we've got many more to come. So Gary, thanks to you and all your production team. Brilliant work. And thanks to everyone for listening. These are timeless stories. So if you know an NFL friend, you want to tell them about the podcast, please do. But we appreciate your support. And we'll be back soon with more from the Neil Reynolds podcast. Until then, bye for now. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.